Hi, everybody. My name is Jimmy Carroll. I'm the Vice President of Operations at Tech B2B Marketing, and we're here for the Manufacturing Matters podcast. I have the pleasure of being joined by Simon Kenworthy and my colleague, Gwen Harden. Simon, thanks so much for taking the time with us today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Jimmy.
So,
nice to meet you guys.
Yeah, thank you. So Shape Process Automation, for those who don't know about the company, could you tell us about what you guys do and what you do there?
Absolutely. So Shape Process Automation is part of the Shape Technologies Group, a larger group focused very much on the trimming and cutting of materials, material handling, amongst many other things that we do in the business. I'm responsible for operations in North America, so I'm Managing Director of Shape Process Automation North America. What do we do? We got a couple of facilities in North America, one in Auburn Hills, one in Burlington, Ontario. And we focus very much on adding process to customers' materials. So focused on whether that's in the automotive, whether it's in food, whether it's in aerospace, whether it's in the GI space, whether it's in the EV or lightweight space, which are the new trends in automotive. Yeah. And we apply process to that. So some people call us an integrator. Maybe we're not an integrator. We have process in our name for a reason, because we apply that process. So a little bit more than just bolting islands of automation together and coming up with solutions.
So we talked about a few different application areas there, and so you work across different areas. Like, are you seeing any particular notable advancements in certain spaces, like, I don't know, like food production, for example?
For sure. And maybe rewind a little bit back. We really cut our teeth in the automotive industry and the soft trim automotive industry. First implementation of robotics with high-pressure water jet, which is part of the Shape Technologies Group. We have the KMT and the Flow brands and the H2O brands, right, which are the market leaders in ultra-high-pressure technology. So we use that technology to trim headliners, car carpets, wheel well liners, that type of thing. So we really cut our teeth in that, and for the last 50 years, that's what we've done. It's still a really key part of our business. But, you know, we made the decision back about 4 years ago to not be so reliant on the waves that come through this automotive industry. You still have deep roots in aerospace, but areas like EV, lightweight, and so these new dynamic materials that are very strong but very light that go into vehicles like boron steel, carbon fiber, things like that. But really looking at food, which was a real change for the industry. Everything's done manually, or was done manually, assembling sandwiches and things like that, using app automation and robotics to really improve that process and deal with the issues in labor. A huge dearth in labor. We heard this morning that it was 8.5 million, a little over 8.5 million open positions, not just in the food industry, but just in the general U.S. market. So we looked at ways we could apply that, and we're really specific and focused on how we did that.
So even though we're seeing a little dip, so we saw earlier today from the presentation, folks were talking about, they were saying a small dip in the food manufacturing. It's really not clear whether that's food generation, processing, packaging necessarily. I'm guessing it's probably across the whole board.
It's
some softness.
It's a myriad of different areas of business inside food.
Right.
We're very much focused on, we took the decision to focus on prepared foods.
Gotcha.
It's something that's become more prevalent. We have the Jimmy Dean sandwiches, and believe it or not, those are assembled now by robots, and a series of Delta robots. You know, putting the bread in, putting the protein cock in there, putting the cheese, the egg, the whole thing, all automated. Whereas before you'd have, 16 people to each robot, what was now one robot, putting those sandwiches together. So huge volumes, looking for consistency, just like we do in any other business, and reliability, reduction in rework or scrap. In this case, scrap sandwiches. It's
a
really interesting.
Better than scrap metal.
Yeah, for sure. Much tastier, I guess. It's interesting how that's become, more reliant on that type of thing. So I'm not sure whether the dips and falls really come, but prepared foods is obviously a huge growth node.
So how was that business segment doing the last few years, COVID and post?
some post, pre-COVID, it was very much manual, but then the challenges that came with the labor, non-availability of labor, or people moving on from, the huge churn in labor. Mm-hmm. I think some of the bigger players in that industry really had an automation journey mapped out. And began to invest heavily in that process.
So gotcha.
We see it not just in those sandwiches, but in pork bellies and bacon and all different kinds of products like that.
Agree.
Yeah.
So you're saying that is that investment continuing, or are we going to take a little pause? It sounds like we're hearing the same thing from warehousing a little bit. But we all know the logistics in warehousing, went through the roof prior to COVID, which is when we acerbated during COVID time. So is the market kind of taking a breath? Or do you think it's in that softness, or is it a matter of, is it cyclical to a certain extent, or is it people who are still focused on the macroeconomic waiting for that shoe to drop?
Or I'm not sure it's waiting for the shoe to drop. It was such a mega trend in terms of the adoption of robotics and automation that there's only so much we can do in the food industry.
Right.
There's only so much you can do in a certain period of time. So we saw, like we said, 21, post-COVID, 22, right. Huge growth in that business as for integrators and people like ourselves. Those customers only have so much bandwidth to be able to do that. So, they go through the automation and the concepting of the automation, the implementation, and then, they've also got to make money with that product and, take a breath and then move on their next step. So most of those large OEMs in the food business have an automation roadmap or journey and kind of have that figured out. So a little bit of a pause in 23, expect to see coming back in 24 again. And we're already seeing the signs of that in our business.
Good. Hoping that's a continuing trend.
Yeah, absolutely. It's got to be.
Right.
Yeah. It's got to be.
Yeah, like kind of on that note of continuing trends, one of the things you brought up I wanted to ask about was EV manufacturing, which is not new, but it's fairly new, and things are changing there, right? So the automation industry kind of had to adapt to some of these processes like battery cell production of EVs. And are you noticing other processes and customer needs that have required you guys to make really unique changes or leverage new technologies, this kind of thing?
Yeah, but it's a diverse business. So, I talked a little bit about soft trim. That doesn't really change whether it's ICE or EV. They need interiors for vehicles and exterior panels. But in terms of battery tray manufacture or battery assembly, there's been a huge growth through that business. Not sure how that's going to continue to grow because of the infrastructure restrictions, et cetera. That's, really a 10, 15,
choking that market
year.
A little bit.
Exactly.
Right now.
Everybody would love to drive an EV, I'm sure, but we've got to have the infrastructure to support that.
Absolutely.
What does that look like? We still have to be economical in terms of the way the vehicles perform. So we need to use these lightweight materials. So there's still a drive to deal with these new materials and apply new technology, whether that be laser, whether that be, high-speed machining, whatever it is. There's also a trend towards these new giga castings, these large castings, which will obviously become prevalent, going away from real big heavy stampings to lightweight materials, lightweight modules that can be bolted together, automated in terms of manufacturing and assembly. So those trends are growing.
Is that primarily in heavy equipment or is that in automotive as well?
Well, it's certainly in automotive and it's somewhat in heavy equipment, but more so in automotive. Where they have these platforms, these modules that they want to build the different vehicle frames on.
Right. Out of a unibody, or not a unibody per se from the traditional sense, but just more modular. So it's more interchangeability.
Kind of like the skateboard model, right? The battery is considered a skateboard, and then we stick everything else on top of that. Kind of.
So with lightweighting, are we talking aluminum, carbon fiber? What exactly?
We're talking aluminum. We're talking carbon fiber. We're also talking boron steel.
Okay.
So these ultra high strength steels that are hot stamped, so they're formed with a high temperature that's significantly thinner than regular carbon steel,
right?
But significantly stronger. So that comes with a nuance that you can't drill or punch it. You have to laser cut it. So we have to build these complex systems that will drill features, put in slots, trim off the excess materials very repeatably, very fast. in less than 2 minutes per side of vehicle, for example. So extremely fast, but high volumes, but flexible volumes.
Right.
That's the other thing with the EV market. Yeah. It's not like, you know, when one of the big three say we're going to make 500,000 vehicles a year, it's going to be this form, and we'll set the line to do that. Mm-hmm. The trend we're seeing now is those volumes are changing. The smaller runs, or smaller volumes per year, but different volumes per year. So the automation needs to be flexible. It needs to be able to be easily deployed. It needs to be able to be built fast, installed fast, programmed fast. So we're kind of saying right now that we need to automate our automation. Mm. What I mean by that is we need to figure out how we program things easier, how we become less reliant on robot programmers.
Right.
Saying that's a bad thing, but so we can respond faster.
Well, plus there's, you know, just not enough of them around.
Right.
I mean, the ease of use thing is something we talk every single company and every single person we talk to. You know, they're always talking about ease of use. And I always say, let's peel back that onion a little bit, you know, because that's like it's like AI to a certain extent. Right. I mean, it's a great tool. It has real value.
Yeah.
But sometimes the hype over extends the delivery of the promise. So ease of use. How do you guys tackle that? I mean, is that just about more simplified? Is it primarily done in the software space? Other areas, training, more personal hand-holding, how do you, leveraging distribution channels, how do you...
It's a little bit of all that, but it's certainly in the software space.
Gotcha.
It's definitely in the training space. So the more we can do offline,
mm-hmm.
and really get to CAD to PAR,
yeah.
the better that process is for the customer. Because we know that vehicles change, there's upgrades, there's also small changes made through the daily manufacturing process that they need to be able to cope and deal with. So we provide software and tools to be able to do that, and we continue to invest in that type of development so that we make it easier not only for the customer but for also our team during that process and that support process.
Awesome. I'll pass it to it.
From like a component standpoint, these individual technologies that you're leveraging in a lot of your systems, whether it's robots or machine vision or motion control or software, right? There's been a lot of advancements, obviously, and there will continue to be, and that's an obvious thing, but how have recent advancements in some of these components kind of pushed your capabilities forward?
So it's a great point, and also back to your prior point, you know, vision's a huge part of it, how that sensor works, how you know where the part is in space, how you know where the robot is in space, tying that all together, the digital twin example that you know, we follow. Really making the real world and the digital world come together to solve that problem. So I'm not sure if I answered your question there, but
no, I mean I just think of different things like tech advancements. Like it's not just robots getting stronger or easier to use, but it's things like vision, and then it's things like industrial computing with more powerful GPUs that are smaller and more capable. That kind of everything kind of pushes these capabilities forward. So. Yeah, I was just curious.
Which simplifies the calibration and the alignment of those three different coordinate spaces.
And for training.
The vision, the robotic, and the real world.
Yep. Absolutely. And, you know, the ability to be able to calibrate and rapidly calibrate to know exactly where you are.
Yep.
That vision aspect of it. And then, you know, the data that we pull from the system for SPC and, you know, tracking and MES integration, things like that. It's all part of that model as everything advances. We can't stand still. We got to keep advancing.
Mm-hmm. Has training become less of a cost center and more of a differentiator for you guys? How serious is your company about approaching that?
Extremely serious about training. We have a couple of facilities where we have dedicated training labs where the customers can get right onto the robot. They get the robot controller in their hand.
Mm-hmm.
We teach them how to recover from issues, how to do basic programming. We'll teach them how to do advanced programming, or we'll come and do the programming for them. So the training of that aspect of it is super important. And being able to give customers hands-on a real robot in the lab-based environment with a captive audience, that's a huge advantage to get them up the learning curve.
Are you starting to push those things online too, or is it just pretty much still in person at your centers of excellence? Or
still in person.
Okay.
You know, there's a safety aspect to it that we want to,
especially when robots are involved. Of course.
Exactly. And we do have some development on collaborative robot, but we're mainly industrial robots, right?
Mm-hmm. Do you think simulators will change that?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. So that whole digital twinning thing that I talked about, and the ability to really predict where the robot is in space, where the part is in space and tying those two together. Simulation's a huge part of it. And it's not just tied to the robot aspect, it's the whole system.
Oh, absolutely. Your tool sets are pretty complex islands, whether it's water jet, laser.
Yeah, and we join those islands of automation together with material handling, more and more material handling. Another part of the labor shortage is being able to load a process cell and unload that process cell with the robotics and automation conveyance.
Right.
We look at debugging that whole system, the PLC debug and simulation, to make sure we don't have to do that problem in the field or deal with that problem in the field.
Right.
Which, obviously prevents burnout from our guys. If we leave them out in the field for too long, it's detrimental to their work-life balance. So,
Yes, sure. Technicians, support technicians can they can rack up the miles pretty good. But if they're not, then that's a blessing. That means, you're able to remotely monitor. You got strong systems.
Yeah.
So.
And that's a great point. We have a 24-hour hotline. Dedicate hotline. We have a team of staff that monitor that hotline and can give real-time response. We respond within 15 minutes. So
that's
kind of a driver from the automotive days, but we apply that across our products.
Yeah, between training and that hotline, you're really helping to minimize downtime through knowledge.
Yeah,
sounds like. So.
Yeah, and this business forum, the A3 business forum, we're connecting with people here who have some really sophisticated tools that allow you to do just that, to run the robot with a camera right there, and you can move the system around safely. And so there's been some great connections at this forum.
This is one of the best shows. One of the best
shows.
I do hope at some point that we can get, and I ask that question a lot of folks, are we taking the simulators, are we pushing them online, are we making them available? Because I think our whole industry is just like everyone else. We don't have enough engineers, qualified folks who are, we point to the educational system and say we need more machine vision, more AI, more motion control coursework and educational programs. But it seems like, and I know that it's happening at the grassroots level too. So we've got academia doing a little bit. A lot of companies like Shape are also making that training available and pushing upwards. You got folks, like ourselves, the people who are trying to share the information with the public so that just to create more visibility about what's possible and what can be done, maybe entice some of those kids. And then, of course, there's the last day of Automate when the school buses line up there at Automate.
We love that, and it's a great point. We talk a lot about what our systems do and what our companies do, but it's all about our people.
Yeah,
focusing on those people and our communities. We really focus on our community, and we focus on our local schools and high schools and colleges to make sure that they're dialed in, because they're the next generation of robot programmers, equipment engineers, tooling engineers, installation engineers, painters, fabricators, machinists, that type of thing. So super important.
People that make the world run.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're watching humanoid robots in there, but I think we're quite a bit away from that.
I agree. They're great to watch. Yeah. That's some of my favorite YouTube videos.
Yeah.
Especially the outtakes.
Boston Dynamics Atlas doing flips and dancing, and it's all very cool.
It is very cool.
It's really cool.
It's very cool. Yeah, and the outtakes from that are even cooler.
Yes. Simon, what else? What have we asked about that you guys are particularly excited about?
Obviously going through a pandemic. Drove a mega trend in automation, but it crippled some businesses. For example, the aerospace business really hit hard. No new major airframe programs going on.
Lots of bad news.
Lots of low passenger numbers, but that's bounced back dramatically in the last, say, 24 months. And the aerospace business has really been hit super hard. What we are seeing, and part of our business, we manufacture systems for maintenance, repair, and overhaul. So we use our high-pressure water jet technology to remove abradable coatings, carbon, seals, that type of thing. So they rework those components, put them back in the engine.
Mm-hmm.
You may be familiar with the LEAP engine, which is on the Airbus, the Boeing, and the Comac. Airframes, similar platform, same engine, but on three different platforms. It's the new engine program, with some super cool new materials in there. The MRO activities are now coming into place to deal with that engine as it goes live. So we've really seen a huge influx of inquiries and equipment requests for the MRO business. So, and that's not just in North America, it's in Europe, it's in Asia, particularly strong in Asia, I agree.
I find that very interesting, because when I think of robots and MROs, typically it's been, you know, get the old paint off, get it on so it's more efficient airframe and things like that. It's pretty much very, obviously the robots and automation are used in the manufacture of individual components, with the, especially the metal pieces, polishing and everything else.
Yeah.
But then to do it on the refurbishing side, to me, I really was ignorant of all that. And I've learned a lot this week about that part of aerospace. So, I mean, is the MRO market potentially as big as the general manufacturing in aerospace, or massively smaller? Or
it's massively smaller than airframe, but it's an integral part of the business. Those parts are recyclable, reusable. Right. And it's kind of, you know, I use the word recyclable. We use a very specific technology. Some is process of record, but we use high pressure water. Others, they use chemicals. Okay. So the chemical is extremely aggressive. It's bad for the environment. So there is also a trend to move away from that more sustainable. So we use the high pressure water. We remove carbon. Like I said, we move these plasma coat type materials. But we recover that 100%. We recycle the water, so it goes back into the system as clean water again. So extremely environmentally friendly.
Yeah. Just filter out the junk and don't add anything
exactly
more negative to it.
Exactly.
I was surprised, because there's such a larger base of aircraft out there moving, you know, that need regular MRO versus how many were rolling off the lines new every year. So that was kind of where I was coming at, where there was potentially a larger
market. I think LEAP is something like 2,000 engine sets per year, which is huge.
Yeah.
You know, those engines are...
This is on the MRO side or brand new going into market?
That's new. But okay. Of course, everything that goes in is on a maintenance cycle.
Right.
So, you know, the newer materials and newer engines have longer
cycles.
Between repair, but they still need to be repaired. And it's not something you do overnight. You got to set your process up and get your process of record, be NADCAP ready in terms of traceability and things like that. So we prepare the systems ready so that our customers can do that.
What's the current interval recommended for North America?
That's a great question, and I don't know the answer.
I'm sure it's different to find what engine you're looking at, different frames,
different
from usage, probably.
From plane to plane, but yeah,
gotcha.
It's several thousand hours, so there's a huge amount of big data out there that tells you all that stuff, but I don't have the answer to that.
All right, well, I'll have to read on my own.
You go.
Thanks, Simon.
I'll email you.
That'll work.
Simon, thanks so much for taking the time. If people want to learn more about Shape Process Automation, it's the website they should visit.
At shapeprocessautomation.com. You can look on LinkedIn and find me, Simon Kenworthy. I'm out there. Look on LinkedIn for Shape Process Automation. We're out there. So pretty easy to find. And then we'll see all our different segments of business that we're involved with.
Outstanding.
All right. Well, I really want to thank you for your time. I appreciate it. I'm glad to be talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.